live from the Valley of the Sun, Phoenix, Arizona, in the heart of the great American Southwest. It's Erskine Overnight. Now, here's Erskine.
It's Erskine Overnight, and to all of our listeners, we're happy to have you with us. We have a blockbuster program tonight. We're going to start off with Dr. Robert Auerbach. Dr. Auerbach is a professor at the University of Texas. He is professor of public affairs at the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas in Austin. Served for 11 years as economist for the United States House of Representatives Committee on Banking and Financial Services. He served under, during the tenure of, he didn't serve under these people, four Federal Reserve chairmen, Arthur Burns, William Miller, Paul Volcker, and Alan Greenspan. He knows these people. He knows their policies. He worked with Representative Gonzalez trying to find out more about what's called the Federal Reserve. He has written numerous articles and two textbooks on banking and financial markets. If it has to do with money, if it has to do with the Federal Reserve, Dr. Auerbach has done it. Deception and Abuse at the Fed. Henry B. Gonzalez Battles Alan Greenspan's Bank. It should be out now, but the book won't be out until spring. It's a book you're going to want to get to counter. And let me ask you, welcome to Erskine Overnight, to Dr. Auerbach.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be on your program. Thank you.
Now, this book that you've written, Deception and Abuse at the Fed, which is at the printers but won't be out till about springtime, did you write this in the bathtub?
No, I didn't, but I heard on 60 Minutes that Alan Greenspan, who I investigated his Fed, you know, all during the 1990s, claims to have written 80% of it in the bathtub. But, Erskine, it's a 500-page book. He'd look like a prune. How is it possible?
Well, he did kind of look like a prune, so I find it almost believable. And the picture of Alan Greenspan with his little laptop lying in the bathtub with bubbles blowing and maybe a little sailboat going by, and I'm picturing this and him writing his book, and I'm going, this is a picture I don't want to see, but copies of it are flying off the shelf because, as everyone knows, he is a genius. He is the person who has brought us to the state where we are today in our financial affairs, and people are honoring him. I don't quite understand that. The Federal Reserve, the most powerful, proactive bureaucracy in the federal government.
Right.
Is it part of the federal government, Dr. Auerbach, or is it private? Who owns it?
Well, when it was set up in 1913... they tried to make it part public, part private. The headquarters in Washington, D.C., the Board of Governors, is part of the federal government, but they call themselves independent. The 12 banks around the country, the 12 Federal Reserve banks, which are part of it, they'd like to think of themselves as private, but most of the courts say, look, you're part of the central bank. One nice thing about, their boards of directors, there are nine members of the board in each one of those banks, are voted in there by the bankers in the district. So the Fed is not independent of the bankers. They are run by the bankers they regulate. So there's a little conflict of interest there.
Yes, there is. And, of course, there hasn't been any significant move to do away with the Federal Reserve except during President Kennedy, and you see what happened to him. Now, one of the things is that there were 17 years of meetings. They had all of these meetings, and you worked with Representative Gonzalez on the House Banking Committee.
Right.
And in America, we have what's called the checks and balances. We've got Congress that oversees the various bureaucracies. You've got the judicial. You've got the executive. We have checks and balances throughout the whole thing. This was set up by Congress. Congress has oversight over the operation generally of the Federal Reserve in some regards. Even though it's sort of a hands away, they still have an accountability to Congress. And Representative Gonzalez was saying, we have a right to question you. We have a right to see what you're doing, how you make some of your decisions. so that you can be independent truly. Is that what Representative Gonzalez was looking for and you were looking for on behalf of him?
You're right, Erskine, except for 17 years, they gave false information to the Congress. In 1976, Arthur Burns, the head of the Fed, decided, you know, they were passing a law in the U.S. Congress called the Sunshine of the Government, and they would have had to make the transcripts of their meetings public. So they just made an announcement. We are no longer taking transcripts. But that was false information. And it went on for 17 years. In my second tenure on the staff of the Banking Committee, Henry Gonzalez called me back from the University of California, and we discussed in his office. I said, how is it possible that the most powerful bank in the free world has no records of its meetings? How is that possible? So Henry Gonzalez called a hearing with Greenspan sitting in the middle, his 12 presidents, 7 governors, all but 2 of the presidents showed up, and they misled us. They wouldn't tell us what was happening. We wanted to know, do you have any records of your meetings? It turns out that they had had a meeting 4 days before where they planned to mislead the Congress. The way we found out about it, Henry Gonzalez said, put the heat on these people. So I sent out faxes to all the witnesses. You've got to tell us where the records are. You must have some records. Well, one of the banks broke and told us about the meeting. And then Alan Greenspan sent a letter by courier. I received it, ran up to Henry Gonzalez. And Greenspan said, you know, we have 17 years of transcripts. And then he started going into his memory problems. Couldn't remember.
And so, he could be Attorney General now.
Right. I can't remember everything about them, you know. And I went over to the Fed with a group of people that I took, 6 Republicans, 6 Democratic staffers, and I demanded to see the transcripts because he had told us at the meeting when we tried to pin him down, Maurice Hinchey, a congressman from New York, tried to pin him down. Alan Greenspan said, well, we have some rough notes. They're no rough notes. They're neatly typed, 17 years in transcripts, right around the corner from Greenspan's office. And now, in his new book, he tries to belittle the whole thing. On page 152, he said, they weren't as interesting as the Watergate papers. That's how he just belittles the whole thing. But the thing
the fact of the matter is, here you've got the chairman of the Federal Reserve lying to Congress. If you went before Congress to a committee, or I went before a committee to Congress, we would be charged with impeding investigation. We'd be charged with perjury before Congress. We wouldn't see the light of day. And he gets accolades as chairman of the Federal Reserve after lying before Congress.
Well, the reason I didn't use the word lie, Erskine, is you have to prove intent. And he says his memory's bad. So he couldn't remember. There's transcripts. And some of those witnesses, they submitted false testimony, and they told Greenspan before the hearing, I have it in my book, we have submitted false testimony, should we correct it? It was never corrected. So I call it in my book the 17-year lie. I don't know how he can dismiss it.
Well, you can dismiss it because it wasn't as interesting as Watergate. There you go. More when we get back with Professor Robert Auerbach, Ph.D.
Don't go postal. Erskine will be right back.
So why don't you just kick back and let's listen to Erskine overnight while I puff on my favorite stogie. Hey now, I wouldn't lie to you.
To this day, any utterance by Alan Greenspan has a major effect on the stock market. Stock can rise and fall according to what Mr. Greenspan says, even though he's no longer chairman of the Federal Reserve. With this much power that the Federal Reserve has to control essentially stocks, bonds, to control the money supply, They have the power in the United States of America. Make no mistake about it. There is no secret government in the United States. It's right there, the Federal Reserve. I think as Meyer Rothschild said, I don't care how anybody votes. What's more important is who controls the money. They control the money. When I'm looking at this, have they are in the perfect place to make money. They're in the perfect place to help anybody they can. Have they manipulated, and a lot of it feel like it's a game, so I've done enough preface. Have they manipulated the stock and bond market, Professor Auerbach?
Yes, they have, and it's in my book. Let me tell you what happened. That's why I have a hard time believing Alan Greenspan. In 1994, he came before our committee, the House Banking Committee, and he told the world, the Congress, the public, we're taking a preemptive strike against inflation. Well, during that period and into 95, they more than doubled the interest rates. And many of us wondered, you know, you're fighting inflation, but we're just pulling out of the 2001 recession. What's going on here? 5 years later, when I got hold of the transcripts, I was down in Austin, Texas now, because I left when Henry Gonzalez, a year after he left the Congress, I read in the transcripts, all during 1994, he was talking about prick the bubble in the stock markets. And he would say, I think we got bonds too. And he was congratulated by members, I think you really hurt the bond and stock markets. Well, I wrote an article for Barron's about what he had done, and he was called back to Congress in the early 2000, and Maxine Waters, a Democrat from California, and Carolyn Maloney, a Democrat from New York City, were waving my Barron's article in front of them. And Alan Greenspan said, and it's in the congressional record, well, I won't do it again.
I won't do it again. He was controlling the stock market under the guise of controlling inflation.
Right.
And lying to Congress about it, lying to the American public about it, much like he did about his 17 years of no transcripts, no recordings of their meetings that they were having.
Well, I would use a more gentle word, misleading. I'd like someone to question him about what he had done, and I haven't had time to read this 500-page book from the bathtub, but I hope it's in there.
You'll come out like a prune. You don't want to read it in the bathtub. It's too much. I read it, much less write it. But when I'm looking at this, the man saying one thing and doing something else, I'm a country boy, and to me that's just a downright good old-fashioned lie. When the guy comes to you and says, we have no transcripts and they're pretty boring, they're just menial notes and they're word for word, to me that's a lie. And now you can couch it in any kind of terms you want to, but to me it's a lie. A lie. It looks like a duck. It walks like a duck. It sounds like a duck. Now, what about...
And the U.S. Congress couldn't get together to appropriate any money. United States Treasury didn't have enough money in their exchange stabilization fund. So the Fed decided to send them the money because they control the U.S. money supply. And they had these secret meetings that didn't come out until then in which they decided to appropriate $5.5 billion to send to Mexico. And they were talking about collateral. They put up as collateral some of the oil facilities in the Yucatan. And some of the governors at these meetings told Alan Greenspan, look, we're bypassing the U.S. Congress. We're appropriating money. This isn't in the Constitution. And there was just no answer. The Fed sent the money to the New York bank that was going to make the loan. That actually stopped the peso from falling. They didn't have to actually make the loan. But what bothered me is they turn around and they shred the transcripts. And I know they shredded the transcripts because I wrote to Mr. Greenspan and I said, why did you shred these transcripts? They go to the National Archives for storage for 30 years. And I got a letter back from someone I had worked with, and I worked 2 years inside the Fed, a very nice fellow, Donald Cohen, who's now the vice chairman of the Fed. And he sent me back a letter and said, yes, we destroyed the source records of the Fed, so all you get is their edited records, and there's a lot of empty space there about what they did. And I just couldn't believe it, that they actually shredded their source records. If Mr. Gonzalez was still alive, he'd be shrieking.
Oh, my. Now, what about money to Saddam Hussein?
Oh, yes. It was in November 1993, several federal marshals brought a prisoner into my office, Christopher Drigault. He was, you know, and it's all chained up in the prison outfit. And in my little office there at the Congress, he changed into a business suit. And he immediately looked like this tiny little agency bank. It's a branch of Banco Nacional del Lazaro. That's a government-owned Italian bank that had its
own. Oh, yeah, we've heard of them before.
Yeah,
sure.
In New York. And we wanted to know, he was in prison for, after this happened and everyone jumped on him, he went to prison. Mr. Gonzalez wanted to know, how did you get $5.5 billion in an agricultural loan from the first Bush administration? It went through your tiny bank to Saddam Hussein, supposedly for agriculture. So, you know, they, but everybody thought it was, you know, he could use it for his military. And
sure.
So, he said essentially that the Federal Reserve, which is in charge of examining, foreign banks, really didn't do much of it. The examiner came in, looked through a few of the state records that were there, but mainly had a cup of coffee with the Mr. Drigault. Was very friendly and left. Drigault got a very short sentence, and he
and Saddam Hussein got $5.5 billion from Federal Reserve.
Yeah,
essentially.
Well,
because
not from
they
the federal,
looked the
came from the,
no,
from the Bush administration.
But they looked the other way. They just
yeah,
didn't
the Department
pay attention
of Agriculture. Exactly. Yes.
More we get back with Professor Robert Auerbach, Ph.D.
Now, don't go getting your pantyhose in a bunch. Erskine will be right.
4 years ago, the Canadian dollar was worth 60 cents to the U.S. dollar. Now it's on par. 4 years ago, the euro, 65% the U.S. dollar's worth of the euro. The dollar has taken a drubbing. You think the price of oil has gone up terribly? Well, the fact of the matter is the value of the dollar has dropped, which has as much to do with what's happened with oil prices as anything, because the value of the United States dollar is dropping. A couple of questions that I'd like to ask you, Dr. Auerbach.
Sure.
They have quit reporting M3. Any reason that they've quit reporting M3 other than the fact that they're just printing up so much money today, they just got those presses running overtime? Any other reason to quit reporting that?
Oh, I don't think it's that, Erskine. They started with M3, which includes essentially consumer credit, in about 1990, and they don't have enough data to run these statistical tests. It didn't kind of match up well with what they were doing. But, I mean, it's still available. I mean, you could calculate it. And
yeah, I've got people who do extrapolate that out, and apparently the money supply is expanding at an awfully large rate from what I can gather.
I don't think it is. It's a fairly rapid, but I haven't looked at it in the last few weeks. But the money supply has gone up in different periods. But it's largely, since 1984, lost a close association with the U.S. price level. And so it's difficult to... One thing it didn't lose, I'm interested in what the Fed did, the Greenspan Fed, between 96 and 2000. There was this big bubble in the stock market that broke, you know, in March 2000. During that period, Alan Greenspan, who in 94 says he was trying to prick the bubble in the stock market to his, he actually fed the stock market. He put in over $1 trillion in those 4 years. That is the M2, the other way they measure money, went up by $1 trillion in that period. I don't know if it's inadvertent, but it was very rapid money growth, and I believe it helped finance the bubble and keep it going a little bit longer. It's kind of odd. His policies were not too consistent.
He's come out with his book. It's been a little over a year since he's been gone from Federal Reserve. We're in a pretty very difficult condition worldwide financially. We've got lots and lots of problems facing us. We've got problems with the yen carry trade. The yen carry trade's back. It's gone one thing and another. And we've got record deficits. The dollar is not holding up against other currencies. A lot of it's due to his policies. He's coming back writing this book now, and he's saying we shouldn't have gone into Iraq, and these are things that the Bush administration has done wrong. Well, all of a sudden he's changing, and he's trying to sound like the prophet. Anybody can be a prophet the day after an event occurred. Excuse me, Alan Greenspan. After it's occurred, you can go back and change your history and become the prophet. I mean, he's like Sylvia Brown. Oh, yeah, well, it looks like rain today. And Sylvia says, oh, I'm getting the impression it's going to rain today. You know, it's the same sort of thing. Let's get real. So why would he be coming out with this now? Would there be a method in his madness other than to make millions, which he will do off of this book?
Right. You know, he's essentially a master politician because he survived through four administrations, and he's proud of the fact that he garbled all his messages that he gave the Congress. I had to sit there for a decade, you know, trying to figure out what he was saying so I could give the members of the committee some questions. He took both sides of every issue. I never heard him consistently say what he's saying now, and I find it kind of odd that suddenly he says the Clintons are great people and he doesn't like George Bush. Whatever your political beliefs, he knows which way the wind is blowing. And he knows that Bush is in trouble and the Democrats are going ahead. And I think he's a political opportunist, to put it mildly.
David Walker, Comptroller General of the United States.
Oh, he's a great guy, yes.
Well, David Walker said that in 2009 there will not be, and of course he's one of the few people who is truly non-political, and he said that in 2009 there will not be enough money to pay the interest on the national debt.
Well, he's worried that Medicare is going to go through the roof, you know, and I've had lunch with him several times. I'm very impressed with him. Only thing I want to do is get him interested in more oversight of the Fed, because he's head of the General Accountability Office now.
Right.
And in the 1970s, we tried to get a law through that would let the GAO go in and do a audit of the Fed so we can see if they're honest. There's a lot of...
Good idea. Great idea. Let's have an audit of the Federal Reserve.
Well, we couldn't get it through the Banking Committee in the 1970s. It finally went through another committee. But the Fed got in there and said, you cannot examine our international money policy. They put a whole bunch of things that had to do with monetary policy. To this day, the GAO can't go in there. And I'm kind of saving this for my book, but there's many ways that the information from the Fed leaks out and people could make. I investigated this, billions of dollars. There's all kinds of leaks from the Fed.
Now, is it fair to say that on congressional investigations that they have been stonewalling any type of investigation of the Federal Reserve? They're keeping it as their own private little compound?
Well, yes, because they're protected by the public. And I know you're not part of this, Erskine, but they're what I call the Fed Watchers industry. You come to Washington, you're a young reporter, and you want to... They say, look, you're on the financial beat. Go over and meet with Mr. Greenspan or Mr. Bernanke now. They have private press conferences where no one's allowed, and you're not allowed to quote anything they say. But if you write a bad article against them, they throw you out, and then you've lost lost your beat in Washington. You might as well quit, you know, as being a journalist. And so it's very, very difficult for journalists to do anything but admire what the Fed does. However,
so either write what they want or you go home, you no longer have access.
And I've got evidence, documented evidence in my book of how the Fed tried to get journalists fired by contacting the owners of newspaper to get them fired. And
well, that isn't heavy arm twisting. Now, there are reforms needed to hold the Federal Reserve accountable, in my opinion, and I think in your opinion also, Dr. Auerbach. What are some of the reforms that we could do to hold the Federal Reserve accountable to the people, or at least accountable to Congress? I know you,
right.
you must have felt like you were just hitting yourself up against a brick wall when you come up against these people.
Listen,
we need to take a break right now. I have better relationships
with other foreign central banks, and this bank is like in another country. You have to establish relationships with it.
The Federal Reserve is like another country. It is totally autonomous, and even the American people can't crack into it. So even our Congress, even representatives, even people like Dr. Auerbach working for the House Banking Committee couldn't crack into it. More about this and how they can be held accountable when we get back.
So don't you go away.
Here at the retirement home, we always listen to Erskine Overnight. It's all we got to listen to.
Talking with Dr. Robert Auerbach, whose book will be coming out in springtime, Deception and Abuse at the Fed, Henry B. Gonzalez Battles Alan Greenspan's Bank. And Alan Greenspan, if you haven't, if you can tell from the conversation that Dr. Auerbach and I have been having, he has stonewalled, he has been deceptive in certain cases. I call it lies, to Congress about one thing and another. And a lot of this will be out in Dr. Auerbach's book, The Alan Greenspan Bank. I think that's interesting that you use that term. Henry B. Gonzalez, who's representing the people in the Congress, battles Alan Greenspan's bank. There shouldn't be a battle. They are...
Right.
Servants of the American public. That's what the Federal Reserve should be. There should be no battle to get information. It should be open as a barn door on almost everything. We're not talking major national security. I could see certain things that they want to keep quiet or keep secret, but by and large, they should have an audit. We should know what's going on with them. Without an audit, when David Walker says by 2009 there won't be enough money to pay the national debt. How does he know that for sure without an audit of the Federal Reserve System?
Right. That's true. Well, first thing I do is pass a law, and I've tried to get some of the people in the Congress to do it, pass a law that they cannot shred their documents, and everything has to be on the record.
That's a good start, isn't it? You can't shred your evidence, your documents. You've got to have at least the documents there, which they have been doing routinely, shredding. Honest to goodness, Dr. Auerbach, this sounds like the Nixon Watergate thing all over again, except they're effective with it, whereas he wasn't.
Oh, that's true. And I'm glad you mentioned Watergate, because... you can see on my website, another thing that happened is, to tell you how open the Fed is. During Watergate, they had, these burglars broke into the, Watergate and were caught. They'd broken in several times. They were finally caught. And, they were carrying $100 bills, $6,300 bills that someone had paid them, I guess, for traveling money. Some of it was traced. But in the Congress, both the House and Senate banking committees thought that there was additional money being that came from another source, and they wanted to know who was funding the Watergate burglars. Well, in 1976, thanks to Henry Royce, I got a lot of information from the Fed. It was just awful. It took us months to get this information, and I told Henry Royce that I had traced some of the money found on the Watergate burglars. And he flew back from Milwaukee at the time. He was a wonderful man. And he said it was so touchy now. Let's not come out with it right now. So I didn't do any more with it until Henry Gonzalez got to office. And I came back in 92, and when I told him about it, he said, "Bob, it's not a secret." And he started to talk about it and exposed. The only thing is, in my book, I have documentation of how the Federal Reserve, when Proxmire, he was the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, Wright Patton was
certainly
the chairman of House Banking, they said, "Where did you, we want to trace the 6,300. Arthur Burns said, "On orders of the FBI, we can't reveal the information." They stonewalled the Congress for years. Meanwhile, Mr. Gray, who was head of the FBI in the United States, took papers out of his safe that had to do with Watergate, took them home, and burned them in his fireplace. There's evidence of all of that in my book, documented evidence.
So, and, in other words, we've never heard the whole story and the whole truth about Watergate.
No. And I only could trace it so far, but had they gone farther, they could find out who was funding the Watergate burglars. So I thought it's time I put that in the book. You know, and the Federal Reserve had come out of the Watergate era as a, you know, Arthur Burns and all of them were clean. Everybody else had been doing, but they were part of the cover-up, and I think that's terrible, the Central Bank of the United States covering up crimes. So I have that in my book, and
if they're covering it up, then that's tantamount to saying that they were involved in it.
Yes, well, I have the...
You don't cover it up unless you're involved, and even if you weren't involved before, when you start covering something up, you are now.
Well, I have the internal records where they tell Arthur Burns what's going on about an hour after it was discovered, and then he replies to these people, and Proxmire just hit the ceiling. The late Bill Proxmire, who jogged every day to work, he was the chairman of Senate Banking, he said, "There's no reason in the world you can't tell us. We are the U.S. Congress." Who, you know, but they wouldn't do it. Now, I don't know why. But it's very suspicious.
You do know why, because if they didn't have, you know, it's sort of like playing poker. If you got good cards, you'll show them.
Right.
More when we get back with Professor Robert Auerbach. Deception and Abuse at the Fed, the Henry B. Gonzalez battle against Alan Greenspan's bank. Gives a whole different picture of Mr. Greenspan, unless you're picturing him in the bathtub, which is somewhere I don't want to go, especially not this time of night. We'll be right back.
Erskine has gone to see a man about a mule, but he'll be right back.
Now that you don't have to kick dick around anymore, you're probably like all the rest. You listen to Erskine Overnight, don't you?
The Federal Reserve, in my opinion, can be deemed the ultimate insider. Talk about your inside trading. When a guy like Greenspan can make utter a sentence that, hey, the housing market's in trouble and it can affect the stock market greatly, then you have the power to control money and the way money is made in this country. If there's anyone that should be held to ultra clean, anyone or any group that ought to be held, but it is all controlled by the banksters. And I'm saying, using that term, banksters, like in gangsters, because they control the entire Federal Reserve. Should it not have greater oversight by the Congress and better oversight by the people? It's the people's money. In your opinion, Dr. Auerbach, don't you believe that we certainly need to have a complete overhaul of the Federal Reserve? I think we do.
Right. Present day when we have this problems with subprime, and we've had a proliferation of hedge funds that are have tremendous amount of borrowings. Nobody knows what's going on, what could happen if the market suddenly takes a dip and their loans are not doing well. And
well, not only their loans, Dr. Arbuck, but also the pension plans that are invested into these hedge funds. And
right.
Even though people don't know it, you'll take junk bonds, you throw it all together, you've got apples, and you crank out oranges at the other end. Nobody even knows how much is in it or who the money's even owed to.
Yeah, and we've had a little taste of what might happen. In 1998, long-term capital management went bankrupt. Remember, they had two Nobel Prize winners.
Sure.
A fellow that went to school the same time as I did, Mr. Scholes, I didn't know him, was one of the people they had there. He's not responsible. I'm just saying they use him for advertising or whatever.
Right.
But it went broke. So Greenspan decided, supposedly, that they had so many billions and billions of dollars of loans that it could disrupt the world markets. And that's just one hedge fund. So what did they do? They called the hedge fund, all the New York banks, into the New York Federal Reserve Bank. And people said they had like 500 lawyers working on it. And somehow it was resolved. So then we said, well, we want the president of the New York Fed and Greenspan to testify, which they did. Let's see the records of what you did there. Who got what? And guess what, Erskine? There are no records. They couldn't.
Oh, they didn't take notes of that meeting either, did they?
No. All done behind the scenes. Who got what? And Greenspan said, we didn't have to keep records because it wasn't public money. It was a bailout. It was not a bailout. But that was the government interceding. And how did they have the audacity, the Greenspan Fed, not to keep records of what happened?
Now wait a minute. Did he actually have the audacity to look at the Congress and say it was not public money?
He said there was no bailout, see, so there's no
money. Enjoy Mr. Greenspan's book, because it certainly is probably going to go down as one of the greatest pieces of fiction written in the 20th century. Dr. Robert Auerbach's book, Deception and Abuse at the Fed, will be out coming up this spring. We'll have him on before it comes out.
We
hope you've enjoyed it.
When I come back, Erskine, I'd love to come back.
You certainly will, my friend. Dr. Robert Auerbach, a brave man, a person who's at the center and knows more about Alan Greenspan than obviously Alan does, because he doesn't spend all his time in a bathtub. We'll be right back on Erskine Overnight. Thank you.
At the top of the hour. You are listening to GCN.